Greatest podcast in the world.
I have a theory that first time listeners hear your music and like, I'm not listening to that show.
We're the best podcast that was ever invented. Linoleum Knife.
We're a podcast about movies.
That's what we are.
And you're Dave White.
I'm Dave White of movies.com fame. And also hot tea enthusiast. You are Alonzo Duralde. You're Alonzo Iced Coffee, Duralde of therap.com, and what the flick dot internet, and yeah, movies.
What the hell was that?
I'm glad you asked.
Like people Alonzo. haven't suffered enough this week. What was that?
Well, after our conversation yesterday while washing the dishes. It is not one of my favorite Japanese metal bands have solutized. It is, in fact, weirdo folk legend John Fahey, and that song is called Ghosts. Did you hear the ghost in it?
Yes. It was like having the Haunted Mansion album on.
Yeah. John Fahey. Famous old dude, not with us anymore. Got more and more experimental as he got older.
Good for him.
Yeah, totally good for him. And, yeah, I mean, like, would you prefer Absolutized?
No. These are the choices.
I actually think I played Absolutized once back in the day. Like, I'm still archiving our earlier podcasts to make sure that we have
figured out where it all went so wrong.
A record of what opening songs we played, so that we don't repeat ourselves.
Yeah.
And also, you know, like DVD recommendations, so that we don't repeat ourselves, things like that. So we're going to have a master list.
Okay.
But it's slow going.
Maybe we can have our own wiki page.
It's slow going with that process, because we never say what the DVD picks are at the same place in the podcast.
Sometimes it's in the middle.
You know, so I have to listen to like every podcast.
And we didn't start doing it. It wasn't an immediate thing. I remember it was a listener, Pyro, suggested that we start doing it.
Oh, really?
Because a lot of the movies that we talked about hadn't gotten to places.
I think everything was my idea.
No. I remember this was an email from Pyro who said that we needed to start doing DVD picks, and that's when we started doing DVD picks.
Well, that's what we do, but I'm anyway. It's not Absolutized, Alonzo. Aren't you happy about that? We had this 20-minute conversation yesterday while doing the dishes,
where you admitted to me
that I hated many. So here's the thing. You know, we play these cassettes, and the reason we play the cassettes is because I thought that was a cool idea. And we have the cassette player and a little mini wall of cassettes, stacks, like a couple hundred, I would say, in our kitchen. Right. And we play the cassettes when we are in the kitchen cooking or cleaning the dish, doing the dishes or cleaning or whatever. And when we wash dishes together, you pick the music, because that's the only way I can keep you in the kitchen. And so all I did yesterday at the beginning of dishwashing was pick up the cassette case of the cassette that you had chosen for our dishwashing experience together. I just wanted to know what I was in for. Now, this cassette that you chose yesterday was full of pop songs. It was like Madonna and ABC and, you know, stuff like that.
R.E.M.
Yeah, like easy stuff, but you have a particular affinity for a kind of 80s roots rock that I can't stand. And I don't think it's necessary that we name names of artists, because what if they heard it? It would only hurt their feelings.
Yeah, okay, the ones that you rattled off
this podcast is so popular.
We're exactly. we're sort of slightly country tinged in some cases.
And I love country music.
And usually people who do sort of story songs.
I like that too. Okay, go to Billy Joe.
And yet you do not like the aforementioned, unmentioned.
Yeah. Really sort of like bland, generic, mainstream 80s bro level kind of roots rock college music.
Okay, now you're
that's
being,
what I'm talking
now
about.
You're being condescending.
No, I'm just trying to give people an idea.
Let me tell you something.
There were
no 80s frat bros listening to the artists that you rattled off yesterday.
Well, you know what?
They were not.
Somebody had to make Hootie and the Blowfish happen.
Well, we're not talking about Hootie and the Blowfish.
These guys,
and that is insulting.
Paved
you
the way.
No, my God. You're the worst.
So anyway.
Yeah, okay, now I'm going to say who we're talking about.
All right.
Because I have to defend myself, because you're making it sound like that I'm throwing down for Blues Traveler or something.
All right.
We're talking about Stan Ridgway.
Who had a great song with Wall of Voodoo, Mexican Radio.
And I think
no good songs after
no,
that.
No, I like his solo stuff. Webb Wilder, who you probably...
I am bored.
A lot of people probably know.
Bores me completely.
He was a Nashville guy.
Sorry, Webb Wilder. I'm sure you're very nice.
I like his stuff.
All right.
And Don Dixon.
Who was great in the movie Camp. He played a camp counselor in the movie Camp. But I am not interested in him musically. I'm very sorry. I'm sure Don Dixon is also very nice. I was being a little condescending. They weren't bros. They were artists.
Yes, they were not frat bros.
They were not frat bros. I was just being kind of a
pill,
kind of a bee.
But don't trust the bee from movies.com.
But I'm not interested. I'm just not interested in that. It all sounds the same to me. And I know that's the argument you give me.
This from bands. A guy who has tape after tape of my stuff all sounds the same. Nice one.
Look. Here was the crux of the discussion yesterday. And by the way, it was not an argument.
No.
You're being very argumentative right now.
Well, because you're showing off for company. You are making this into a whole other thing.
But yesterday, all I said was, the price of being your spouse is that I have to listen to these people for the rest of my life. And I'm cool with that. I just want a little advance warning. Like, you know, if it's Madonna doing the Express Yourself song, which was the first song on this tape, I can be like, okay, you know what? I never actually have to hear Express Yourself by Madonna again for the rest of my life, but I'm cool. I'm all right with it.
Yeah, this was a tape.
Never have to hear When Smokey Sings by ABC.
This was a mixtape
for the
I
rest
made
of my life.
In 1992 for my older siblings who have very mainstreamy tastes in music.
You could say that.
I do not have posters
but you
up
owned
for
this,
these songs.
But you owned this music. So, anyway, you know, I just wanted to know, you know, if I was going to have to endure a Stan Ridgway song or if I was going to have to sort of mildly endure When Smokey Sings by ABC.
Also, you're making it sound like I flipped out or something. You picked up the cassette, and all I said was, oh, come on, that's cheating. And then you went off on this whole thing about, well, you know, I never liked Stan Ridgway, and I, being married to you, I have to listen to it, and I'm okay with that, but I don't like it. It all sounds like
And I don't do it. I don't. I'm very good about not subjecting you to the noisy
you are.
Stuff.
I've always given you
except yesterday
that.
When I had it on while I was making pancakes.
Yes.
And you know what? You know why I had it on? I really wanted to see how it sounded while the KitchenAid mixer was beating the egg whites.
It could only be
and it sounded really good together. Those two noises.
That's great.
They complemented one another. And sort of fused together.
Next time I'll see if I can
in a
arrange,
highly concentrated way.
I'll see if I can arrange for two 18-wheelers to collide in front of our house. See how that underscores the ambience.
My birthday is coming up.
Well,
so if you could,
putting that out there,
if you could orchestrate that.
Oh, brother. Okay, so.
Why don't you start talking about a movie?
Oblivion. So, yeah, it's Tom Cruise, and it's the future, and there's been a war. The robot holocaust has happened, or whatever, and the moon is...
Oh, come on.
The moon is messed
up. Talk about what super really happened.
Okay. So it's
a documentary.
It's 2077, and 60 years earlier, the alien invaders showed up and screwed up the moon, and between that and all the nuking that happened to get rid of them, the planet is pretty much a wasteland. All the humans have been shuttled off to live on one of the moons of Saturn, and the only ones left on Earth doing last-minute cleanup and drone maintenance are Tom Cruise and... Andrea Riseborough, who you may recall as Mrs. Simpson from W.E., speaking of Madonna.
You don't recall. Nobody recalls.
Nobody recalls that.
Nobody saw W.E. except me. And did you see?
I saw it.
Yeah. We saw We.
Mm-hmm.
But.
F.E.W. did. Okay, so, and the drones are there basically to look for what remains of the scavengers, which are the aliens that showed up. But Tom Cruise has these nagging memories of long, long ago that couldn't possibly be real because they're from decades earlier when he was in New York City and on top of the Empire State Building with Olga Kurylenko.
Yeah, and he wasn't alive then.
Of To the Wonder, which we'll be talking about momentarily. And then, of course, he learns the... horrifying truth.
The horrifying truth.
And all of the truths and all of the everything in this movie is from another movie, pretty much. It's
okay, sure.
It looks great. It's directed by Joseph Kaczynski, who did Tron Legacy, which we actually liked.
That's right.
But boy, Christy and I were talking about it on What the Flick. You literally just sit there and start checking this list off, like 2001, Planet of the Apes, Moon, WALL-E, like all these other movies where all these concepts have popped up before, and The Matrix. It just feels like this slumgullion of, other sci-fi ideas sort of thrown together in a very shiny pot.
I'm making a slumgullion for dinner tonight.
Yum. Google it, kids. It's a real word.
Keep talking.
That's it. That's all I got.
But now tell everyone your... flawed opinion about it.
That's basically it. It annoyed me how familiar it all was, and what's doubly irritating is that you can tell the movie feels like it's going to blow your mind with its revelations, but it's like you've arrived at those revelations minutes before the characters did. So when they get to the big you're like, yeah, duh. I saw that coming. Thanks, but yeah, it looks really good. I liked Andrea Riseborough's performance. But this is a weird movie about women because, you have, the mission control voice is Melissa Leo with this really weird twang. And so, Olga Kurylenko...
Molly Hunter crossed with Al 9000.
Thank you. And Olga Kurylenko, who is an astronaut, winds up being rather inert, and kind of, led by the hand through all the action stuff. You basically boil that... You have the women who are either duplicitous or, nothing. Or, there's a big... When you see the evil aliens who are behind the invasion, they are represented as this big giant space triangle, and it's my joke to my review that it was like that they could have been designed by Judy Chicago.
Well, right.
So I don't know. They're just that kind of bugged me. Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise, as Francis Farmer once said about Cary Grant.
Very, very clever of you in relation to the plot there.
I just mean in terms of, it's exactly what you're getting. If you are a fan enough of the genre that you got to run out and see this the new sci-fi movies, see it in IMAX because it is gorgeous. But if you're on the fence about it, odds are you'll be like, whatever.
With these two movies, Joseph Kaczynski has really pushed my pleasure buttons. Like, I'm a willing recipient of his brand of beautiful, smooth, digital space stuff.
What would his architecture magazine be called?
Surface. Which is already actually a style magazine. I was going to say, it's going to take it. I like his surfaces. There's almost nothing tactile about his movies. Like these two films, you can't say to yourself, I would love to reach out and touch that, because you can't. It's in the air. It's made of ones and zeros. Like it's, but not in a gross way. Like these are all the giant monsters we're fighting. It looks like a really cool environment to not live in. And he's also not a hack. Like, you can tell that he doesn't want to make stupid, useless movies.
No.
He's definitely now, after these two big movies, he's an event film director. Mm-hmm. But you can feel like he's rebelling against the idea of heartlessness.
In favor of soullessness.
He's against soullessness as well.
I see.
Whether you feel like he's accomplished this or not is where we divide ourselves.
I see.
You know, I feel like he's given it the try. Like, he knows his movies are good looking. And now he wants to make them good movies. And if you think he hasn't, then fine. But I really loved Tron Legacy. And one of the reasons I loved Tron Legacy was because I felt that the whole daddy issues stuff in the movie between Garrett Hedlund and Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
It felt, you know,
resonant.
Yeah.
No,
maybe I'm stupid.
No, I will defend that film. And I think what's interesting is the original Tron was the idea of computer animation before computer animation really existed, and they just faked it all.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, okay, this is a thing now. How do we go back to the source, this thing that is so very much about this practice and this art, and really kick it to, you know, the ultimate thing? And I think he sort of rose to that challenge. And, you know, yeah, the characters are interesting. I liked the Olivia Wilde character a lot. I thought she was, you know, that was sort of an interesting concept they didn't completely flesh out. This movie just feels like it's based on his own graphic novel or whatever, and it's one thing if a movie borrows a thing or two from some other films, but it just, so much stuff. And it does that, you know, I don't want to give away the ending, but it builds things to a way where, what I call the have your cake ending, where it feels
Don't talk about anything like that.
No, I'm not getting into details, but I'm just saying that it promises one thing.
It does promise one thing and then give you something else.
And then
I agree with you on that. And I'm here. Let me give you what I loved about it before I tell you how I, you know, ultimately how it kind of shakes out for me.
Okay.
He is a pastiche sort of director. Mm-hmm. He is borrowing and cribbing and stuff. And I feel like he's actually building his own thing out of those other things. You know, in my review, I called it, he's building his own ice sculpture out of, you know, chunks of ice he's stolen from other people. But getting back to the heart of it, I feel like he knows what he doesn't want. He doesn't want empty action. He doesn't want heroes who can't feel. He wants them to have emotional lives.
Okay, sure.
Unfortunately, I think one of the problems here is Tom Cruise, who has recently really been going for it and delivering, you know, sometimes the best performances in rotten movies like Rock of Ages. And you can feel Tom Cruise always working. Like, he's never not present. He's never not engaged. But I feel like here he was instructed to more or less be Keir Delay in 2001. This sort of like blank thing. And that works with the plot, which I won't give away details of.
Well, they tell you up front that, you know, that everybody on Earth had a memory wipe because the war was so traumatic.
Right.
So he goes from playing a character who has been robbed of memories, although still holds on to a couple of them by accident somehow, to someone who, you know, has
like
more
the girl in the host who can't fully get rid of her old self.
Yeah. You know, and eventually he has more of an understanding of things, but the performance doesn't change all that much. Like, he never stops being a blank slate, even when ostensibly his character is more self-possessed. The other thing that bugged me is Zoe Bell is in this movie and has not only no dialogue,
right,
but also no action.
Right. See, okay, now here's what you are doing. You are nitpicking at details, and it's bugging me.
Well,
I would like to get to where I'm going.
I only nitpick when I've already
you know, missed, it takes me a long time to explain myself.
I've already missed the train. So, okay, go on. Make your point.
He wants to remake Giorgio Moroder's Metropolis. He wants a shiny robotic thing that also feels. He has not accomplished that with this movie. Finally, I can get to my point, because you are finished talking about Zoe Bell. This is where the movie falls down. He hasn't pushed it enough. I still liked it. I think I'd like to see it again, if only just to look at it. It's not great. But it's not garbage either. It's not easy to just dismiss this. He's going for something really big. It doesn't hit the mark fully, but it's a nice try. There. Now you can keep on nitpicking with your fine-tooth comb there.
Oh, are you done now?
Yeah, I am done. I know it takes me a long time to get to the point sometimes, but I've got details and digressions that I have to pull in.
And listening I've to, got listening a long me, white beard.
Listening to me is along, a rich...
Along with all of
experience.
Our listeners. Who are like, can you get on with it, Dave?
I could get on with it if you weren't constantly interrupting me.
This is not podcast Alexander Platz.
Yeah, it is sometimes.
No, I've said my piece. I think that this is it's a great looking movie, but that it's gobbledygook, if you will.
I won't. How do you like that?
Fine.
What are your feelings on those apples? Eh?
Poor Boston. It's been a week.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, this week is To the Wonder, or as we should probably say it,
The Lords of Salem. That's the other big release this week.
Is it a big release?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen a single ad for it or anything.
I think when you see ads for stuff that looks like Lords of Salem, I think you just sort of bleep right over it.
No. If it's
like a Dostoevsky name.
Yes. No. Thank you, Linus. No, if it's a movie, I'm paying attention. And like, I've not seen much about it at all. When you were talking about having to review it, I was like, oh, is that this week? Really? Like, it wasn't what I was going to review anyway, but I had not seen it in the places where one hears about new movies that are opening.
It's the new film from Rob Zombie.
Yes, it is.
Your favorite director, Rob Zombie.
I think the first two movies have things in their favor, and I appreciate his sort of geekiness about horror movies. The Halloween remakes are a poop heap.
Earlier this week, James Rocky said to me, I'm as enthusiastic about Rob Zombie as a director as I am about him as a musician. There's kind of a paraphrase, but that's basically what he said. So here's the first two films, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, were full of gross, 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 gross kind of stuff. The two Halloween movies were unfortunate. Although I will say that the sort of psychological elements of the two Halloween movies were interesting. I just don't think he knew fully where he wanted to go with those.
You're being generous, but fair enough.
Yes. Because I don't distrust his taste in horror.
No, 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 not at all.
He's, you know, he's got plenty of cred.
I almost kind of want to put him in that category with the RZA, where it's like, I would much rather that they hosted retrospectives of their favorite films and perhaps produced promising young newcomers in the field, but didn't make the movies themselves.
Well, okay. He's trying to move off in a more Roman Polanski-ish direction this time. It's about a woman played by his wife, Sherry Moon Zombie, who lives in a sort of really pretty, rambling kind of apartment building in Salem, Massachusetts, and she's a rock radio DJ. And she kind of goofs on her guests. Like, you know, she looks the part. She's got, you know, the white girl dreadlocks and covered in tattoos. She looks like a Rob Zombie fan. And believe me, there were a whole bunch of Rob Zombie fans at the screening that I was at Thursday night.
Which was both a public screening and a radio screening,
lots
right?
Lots and lots of ill-considered tattoos.
More so than the Evil Dead screening we went to?
Yeah, more so.
Okay.
So, and it was funny. The people sitting next to me were having, I assume, what they considered to be a private conversation, but they were both talking in their quite out loud voices before the movie started about... one of them had worked for Suge Knight. And I'm not going to repeat anything that I heard.
Oh.
No, I can't.
You can't.
Setup? No. But apparently, anything you've ever heard about Suge Knight as a person is corroborated by this former employee.
I see.
Like, stuff you don't even want to know.
Okay.
Which I just think is fascinating, you know. I especially think it's fascinating that public space has become so occupied by, you know, phones that people are having their conversations out loud everywhere they go now, that when you're having just a regular conversation with another person, you're still broadcasting it to everyone around you. Like, I'm sitting in the chair right next to this person. It's a packed theater.
Right.
And I and everyone around could hear what they were saying.
It's kind of the point now when you see the crazy people walking down the street, like, talking out loud to themselves.
You just think they're on the phone.
Yeah. I have to look for the Bluetooth. They go, oh, no, you're actually insane. Yeah. Sorry. Never mind.
So, anyway, getting back to the movie, Sherry Moon Zombie, she's got a past. Former drug addict. She goes to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. She's a radio DJ. She's a hard rock radio DJ. Has black metal musicians on her shows, and they all talk about, we're a band from Satan and hell, and she just kind of laughs at them. And then, you know, she'll have, you know, Salem researcher, professor guy on the show, played by Bruce Davison. And she kind of goofs on him, too, and so nothing sticks to her. She's got her own thing, her own life. She doesn't want to be bothered. She'd rather listen to Rush. And then a record arrives, and it's in a wooden box. And it's from a band called The Lords. And she plays it, and
Vinyl LP?
Yeah, a vinyl LP. And here's what I love. I love the reference. I love how this references all of the 80s. Satanic panic about, this is what happens when you play this record backwards, and there's evil in the music, and it's in the grooves of the record.
Wasn't that already an 80s horror movie, or a couple of them?
Yeah,
like Alice Cooper was in one of
Trick
them.
Trick or Treat.
And
you know what? You know what I should have played for the opening music? I should have played my cassette that I have. From the 80s, the Christian cassette that of the guy talking.
Backward Masking Unmasked.
It's called Backward Masking Unmasked. And boy, is it great listening. It is such a great thing to listen to. I'll find an appropriate part of that to play sometime.
Okay.
Anyway, she plays the record and begins sort of hallucinating, flashing back, maybe flashing forward to her future. The devil's coming for her. And somehow involved in all of this is her landlady, played by Judy Geeson or Geeson.
Geeson.
She was in To Sir With Love when she was like 17.
Yeah. She was a Dolly Bird.
And she, yeah. And she, she's got two friends, Dee Wallace and Patricia Quinn, who was Magenta in the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Right.
And so, like, they're like this sort of tea time... They're a coven. I mean, like, and their intentions are revealed fairly early on. This isn't... I'm not giving away tons of things here.
But Dave, like, doesn't a coven need a fourth?
Maybe. Maybe.
It's what I learned from The Craft.
Yeah. So each time she... so many things you can learn from watching The Craft. Each time Sherry Moon Zombie has sort of a vision, some creature shows up, like a naked zombie chick or a yeti at one point, which is great.
Okay.
A dwarf, a demon, maybe like crazy music, you know.
A Flibberty Gibbet, a Will-O-The-Wisp.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's never boring. It's slow moving and sort of, you know, he's going for inexorable, but it's... clunky, low budget, and occasionally goofy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fully work, but I still half enjoyed myself anyway. More importantly, and we're about to talk about To the Wonder. I really feel like the way Terrence Malick treats his women now is these sort of like angels on earth that spin around in fields and point to God in the skies. I really feel like Rob Zombie is doing the same thing, only with the devil. Like, this is such a showcase for Sherry Moon Zombie, who, admittedly, not a great actress, but her skill set is effectively used here. She's not dynamic, but neither is her character. And so... But I feel like toward the end of the film, when finally, okay, obviously, yeah, she's going to be a part of the coven, it's almost as if he is deifying her as this kind of demon Madonna. You know, like, there are shots near the end where she's this glowing sort of statue to be worshipped, in a way.
Huh.
And he clearly does. Like, a man does not love his wife more than Rob Zombie. There is, after watching this, it's so clear, like, that he basically worships her. And in my review on movies.com, I was like, this is sort of the flip side of To the Wonder, where, you know, the light and the dark of Christian theology sort of battling it out here. Terrence Malick is increasingly Christian with every step, and Rob Zombie is never going to go there. But he's, you know, his wife may be the queen of hell.
So by the end of the movie, she's that old devil moon.
Pretty much. So yeah, it's not rotten. It's pretty good. I enjoyed myself. I feel like there are two things going on with his filmmaking. He's either still learning on the job,
mm-hmm.
and believe me, I can't criticize anyone for learning on the job. I've gone back and I've read some of my early reviews. Oh God, I'm embarrassed. I'm glad iFilm doesn't exist anymore, so people can't go back and read those things. Seriously, I started writing about film for money before I was ready to. And anyone who hated me from then, give me another chance. Like,
I'm sure you're being too
hard. Oh, no, I am not being too hard on myself. I'm being exactly the right amount of hard on myself. Either he's learning on the job,
uh-huh.
or he's intentionally making these sort of rough around the edges, thudding sort of films.
Like it's his own grindhouse?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's funny. The casting of the Coven lady sort of reminded me of, remember The Sentinel?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
So, you know, which is very sort of a post Rosemary's Baby ripoff.
Right.
I don't know. Just kind of that popped into my head as one of his possible reference points.
One thing I really loved in this film was Patricia Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
She, every time the camera's on her, she just is electric. Like, it makes me wonder why she was never a big star. You know, from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, the same thing. You can see it in her eyes. Like, yeah. She loves being on camera, and the camera likes paying attention to her. I don't know what... I mean, she's worked all this time, but she hasn't been, you know...
Right.
She didn't become huge.
Yeah.
She's been a cult star her whole life.
Unlike Little Nell.
Correct.
Who became a nightclub entrepreneur.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a curiosity to me.
Yeah, okay.
Why she didn't become the thing.
You know, sometimes they don't feel like it. It's, I mean, like, right. I remember talking to a woman who was the director's wife, and she was close friends with Tuesday Weld.
Right.
And she talked about it. She goes, oh, they tried so hard to make Tuesday famous. She just didn't want it. She didn't want to do it.
Meaning what exactly?
She did not want to, like, sort of give herself over to the kind of star machine.
But so, what does that entail exactly?
Well, I think it means that, you know, you turn down...
I mean, do you have to get jumped in?
No, like, I'm sure it differs from person to person, but I think
it's... to kill an innocent stranger?
Okay, well, like last week when we were talking about...
What if you did have to kill an innocent stranger?
I wouldn't be surprised.
What if that was part of the... What if that's the real secret history of Hollywood? Like, everyone who's super famous has actually had to go out and clandestinely murder someone...
Some random...
To prove their commitment to the... to the cause, yeah.
Anyway,
Meryl Streep slowly poisoning, you know, a child.
God, this got dark. I think what it has to do, okay, for example, last week we talked about Brady Corbett and how...
What if they told Meryl Streep she had to go kill Brady Corbett?
Okay, will you shut up with the killing?
It didn't work.
No one is killing anybody. Relax. But no, here's a guy who, like, who has that face, you know, he could have, I'm sure there were a lot of more lucrative paths he could have followed. He's like, nope, I'm going to go make this Gregor Rocky movie, and then I'm going to go make this Lars von Trier movie, and I'm going to make this Michael Haneke movie, and, you know, so that there is, you know, that's what not playing the game is, you know, so I'm sure for Tuesday Weld, it's like, no, I'm going to make Pretty Poison, you know.
Right. And then play it as it lays.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, she's a great actress, and I think she's done interesting work, but she, you know, is gorgeous and could have had a much more sort of mainstreamy, you know, popular career. I was like, nah, don't want to. Don't feel like it.
Can you see Blade as it lays on a format?
Last I heard, it was still not on DVD, and I don't
really?
Know. I don't know that they made it like a movie on demand or whatever.
That's such a cool movie.
Oh, it's so good.
And weirdly enough, I've seen it like 3 times, even though it's impossible to see.
Well, they screen it here periodically.
Like, yeah. I saw it once in Dallas when Bruce LaBruce came to the film festival.
Right.
And played his own...
His rickety little 16mm
print. Busted 16mm print. And then they've shown it a couple times here at the Cinematheque. But yeah, like, just... Such a cool movie. I wish it were available widely. That would be great.
Yeah, it's still not out. I don't know what the problem there is. But yeah, based on the Joan Didion novel and Tuesday Weld, Anthony Perkins, it's I think it's one of the great L.A. movies in a lot of ways in terms of just the way... I mean, well, which I guess should bring us to Los Angeles Plays Itself, which you went and saw again last night.
Well, that's my DVD recommendation of the week, even though it is not on DVD.
It's not on DVD.
Aha, however.
It's on YouTube.
However... And I realized something last night while I was at the Egyptian watching the 3-hour documentary called Los Angeles Plays Itself, which is a documentary entirely about from a CalArts professor, a guy named Tom Anderson, a documentary about how Los Angeles is used in film, the history of that. 3 hours move like that.
Yeah. It's okay. It's fascinating because it sort of turned it's the idea of Los Angeles as a character really in a lot of ways.
You see no clips at all from Play It As It Lays.
Really?
Now possibly because it's not easy to get.
Right.
But also possibly because I didn't realize this. I've seen this movie now 2 or 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I had forgotten about the first couple times of seeing it is that he takes a swipe at Joan Didion.
Ah. That would explain it then.
That's sort of like a mystical, privileged hippie.
Huh.
Yeah, like he... There's something else going on, you know, with his dislike of her.
Right.
It's a very cool movie. It's on YouTube. The reason it's not on DVD... is because
it's all film clips.
Although he did say during the Q&A last night that all of them fall under the fair use
umbrella.
And so it would seem to me as though it could be
produced for sale. Somebody put From the Journals of Gene Seberg on DVD for a while.
Yeah.
It's out of print, but
exactly.
You know.
So that's it's such a great movie. You got a few hours. You got 3 hours, and you should make 3 hours for it. It's so great.
And if you have Twonky Beam on your Roku, you can watch it on your television.
Yes.
That.
You are referring to a letter that we received last week from Bill in Las Vegas.
Yes.
A letter I did not understand, but that I read
nonetheless
with conviction.
Yes. Actually, you put Play It As It Lays in your TiVo because it has popped up on the Sundance Channel.
Has it?
Yeah, I remember. Really? I TiVo'd it, and I thought I burned it to disc, but maybe I didn't.
Maybe.
But yeah, so it does surface every so often, so check it out.
Yeah, it's not lost or destroyed or anything. It's just...
In some weird legal...
Hard to find, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's okay. My DVD rec of the week. It's actually a YouTube rec of Foundation.
To the Wonder, or as we call it around here...
To the Wonder.
Why don't you explain what happens?
We climbed the steps to the Wonder. Is what opens the movie. Olga Kurylenko. Two films that we're talking about with her in it this week. She's a French woman named Marina, in love with a man played by Ben Affleck, who is named Neil in the credits, but never is his name is never mentioned in the film.
Right.
You see them being in love a lot. They make moony, swoony faces at each other. She does a lot of twirling around at the wet flats at Mont Saint-Michel.
She has a daughter.
She has a young daughter. And she follows him to Oklahoma from Paris. There's your first mistake.
What are you thinking?
Yeah. Follows him to Oklahoma, but she loves it there. She super loves it there. Like, in the film, she calls it, what are the words she uses to describe it? Like, honest and rich. Like... Girl, have you ever really been to Oklahoma? I mean, they did shoot the film there. They stumble in their love journey, and she goes back to Paris. In the meantime, he falls for a woman from his past named Jane, who's played by Rachel McAdams. But then Marina comes back to Oklahoma, and they get married. What precipitated all of this? We don't know. And that is because all the dialogue in the film is sort of spoken in hushed sort of tones. Sentences are fragmented. They trail off into nothing. The dialogue is actually not
even dialogue
really. Much relevant.
The
occasionally
film...
you hear snippets of people talking about the ruined earth that is related to Ben Affleck's job, and so you feel like part of the film is about that. But in reality, I think it's sort of an extrapolation of the most mystical bits from the Tree of Life.
Without the dinosaurs.
Minus the dinosaurs.
To me, this movie felt like it was all stuff that takes place between the scenes of a conventional movie. Sure. Like all the stuff that happens right before or right after a scene where people actually have a conversation, or snippets from montages of other movies, but with ever actually being, you know, standing still enough to be just a scene in a movie. You know, my joke was, you know, Godard has a film called A Woman Is a Woman that keeps making you think it's going to be a musical, and somebody will say a line that sounds like it's the prompt to a number, and the music will be like, da-da-da-da-da, and then it'll stop. And then the number never happens, and the movie keeps going, and it's like it's a movie that never quite becomes a musical. This, to me, feels like a movie that's been entirely cobbled together from all the stuff that would be left out of or covered only in passing in another movie. Whether or not you think that's good or bad is up to you, but
there is a story.
Yeah.
There is a story, and if you're paying attention and not totally spacing out, you'll follow it. But connective tissue is abandoned.
Yeah.
These aren't necessarily characters in the way that you want to them to be characters. They are symbols, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because lately Malick's been treating, especially, been treating his women, going back to Lords of Salem,
right,
like these little sort of representatives of Jesus on earth. You know, they're like these angels that spin around. Seriously, and I'm not making this up, all the women in this film, just like Jessica Chastain in The Tree of Life, just like all the way back to Sissy Spacek, they're twirling. Now, Sissy Spacek was twirling a baton, but these women are twirling their bodies. And you're saying the world's slowest whirling dervish. Yeah,
yeah, there's a sort of religious ecstasy in slow-mo going on.
Arms outstretched to the sky. You know, this is how they commune with God. And in fact, as I mentioned in my review, in To Tree of Life, Jessica Chastain holds the baby, points to the sky, and says, "That's where God lives." Now, Terrence Malick has always been this sort of, what's a good word? A naturalist, spiritualist, you know, sort of cosmic transcendentalist, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of, he'll have his camera on someone's face and then pull down and focus on a bug or the bark of a tree or some leaves, or he is as connected to the earth as he is to his people. His people risk flying off into the sky. His camera's pointed at the ground or at their hands sort of reaching out to something. It's a very Bressanian thing to do. I know I keep bringing it up, but
Get on Google and find Christopher Plummer's interview where he talks about having his role mostly cut out of the New World.
Oh, yeah.
And he talks about how you'll be in the middle of a scene and Malick will suddenly be like, "Oh, I see an osprey over there. Hang on a second. I want to go film it." At some point, he may just give up on people entirely and just make, maybe, you know, like nature documentaries.
Maybe. But here's the thing about the Bresson reference, and he's influenced by Bresson. When he cuts to hands, they're just sort of reaching out into nothing, you know, with the hope that there's God on the other end. The Bresson hands are doing other things. And so I think that's where they definitely differ. I feel like if you wanted to make a parody of this, it's too late. Because he did it already.
Yeah, if you were setting out to make a movie that goofed on Terrence Malick's style, you would just make it to the wonder.
Anyway, getting back to my earlier point, he used to be very sort of, you know, cosmic and almost pagan, but he's moving in the direction of straight up Christian. There's no second guessing this really anymore. Because he's not talking about the great, you know, he may call it to the wonder, but he really is saying to the Jesus. Like, there's this is going in that direction. And I'm not having a problem with that. If he becomes America's, you know, most artful Christian director, fine. Because have you seen the Christian movies that come out?
I don't know. That's a world's tallest midget kind of distinction, just given the rest of the...
Look, I've seen Christian cinema of the past, you know, however long. From the time I was a kid until now. I've seen these Christian movies, these very directly evangelical Christian films. Almost to a film, with the exception of Johnny Cash's The Gospel Road.
I knew that was going to come up somehow.
And weird.
And not to mention Tyler Perry's Temptation.
Yeah, well, all the Tyler Perry movies, more or less.
Pretty much.
But I'm talking about stuff like, what was the movie that came out last year? Courageous, was that what it was called? The cops?
Oh, I guess. What was the fireman one? Fireproof?
Something like that. Yeah. These movies are rotten.
Yeah.
They are bad, bad movies. If you are an evangelical Christian listening to this podcast right now, you deserve better than the kind of nonsense that's being, you know, delivered your way. If Terrence Malick wants to go off and, you know, make his own version of See Me Dance, I'll watch that.
Yeah, but you know what? What's going to be more likely to fill the revival tent?
That's not my problem.
I see.
Yeah. Back in the day...
Look, I went to a church where they showed us Pasolini's Gospel According to St. Matthew.
You were you were raised in a very sort of progressive Catholic environment. I remember being in college once. I mean, once I remember this college course I was in. It was a creative writing class. And you could write short fiction or you could write poetry. That was your choice.
Right.
And this one young...
Poetry has larger margins.
This one young lady in the class thought she was going to make it easier on herself by writing poetry.
Uh-huh.
And she was definitely evangelical. Mm-hmm. The worst... I didn't realize you wrote poetry. I didn't realize you wrote such bloody awful poetry. Yeah. The worst poems about Jesus that I have ever read in my life. And then it came time for critique, and the class is you critiqued each other. Mm. And everybody was really nice to each other all the time, but I wasn't nice to anybody. But I knew I had to be half nice to her, because she would crumple up like a little paper flower and, you know, be mad and think I hated God or whatever. And I said, have you ever read anything by Flannery O'Connor? And she's like, no. I said, have you heard of Flannery O'Connor? No. Have you read anything by Walker Percy? No. You ever heard of Walker Percy? No.
No. Well, these people, it begins and ends with C.S. Lewis. That's all they got.
Right. And I said, okay, here's what you need to do. Seriously, if you're serious about this, like, if you think this is going to be your life's vocation, go read Wise Blood. Go read, you know, A Good Man Is... Start with A Good Man Is Hard to Find. That's really where you want to go first. Go read anything by Flannery O'Connor. Go read The Moviegoer. Go read whatever. Read these authors. And understand as you are reading them, these dark, dark stories, that these are devout Christian writers. And then start over. Then go write a different poem. Please. Because you're not doing Jesus any favors here.
It's funny. There was a movie that we saw this week where two people arrive at a beach and start figuring out where the footprints are going. And I leaned you and I tried to say, it was then that I carried you.
Exactly.
Another oblique Texas film that's out in theaters right now.
Wait, are we done talking about Do the Wonder?
Aren't we?
I guess we are. I don't know. I thought maybe we were going to put a cap on it or something, but... Again, just like with Oblivion, I did not hate it, but I just want to know where he's going next.
I mean, my thing with it was... I just kept thinking when I was able to stay awake, because I did, I think, actually nod off a little early on, but the movie itself is so dreamlike, it's hard to tell, you know?
Speaking of nodding off, I swear that has to have been what happened when we were watching Scary Movie 5.
Oh, yes.
I think I dozed off during the Usher cameo.
Let's talk about that for a second.
I don't remember dozing off.
I meant to bring that
up. How many minutes was the Usher cameo?
It was short.
Okay.
I meant to mention this at top of the show. Dave White thought it was so funny last week.
Yes.
I thought Usher was in Scary Movie 5. It was actually Bow Wow. And that makes me a racist because I think all black people look alike.
Well, you are racist.
Well, ha, ha, ha.
You're super totally racist.
Usher still is in Scary Movie 5.
Usher is in Scary Movie 5. Very briefly, I must have spaced out for a second or closed my eyes for a little 2-minute nap. I don't know what I did. What are you pointing your ear at me for? You want me to say I'm sorry?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
That ain't happening.
You owe me an apology.
That snowball is gonna stay cold through hell before you get an apology.
Well, then why don't you just say that I was right? How about that?
Alonzo Duralde was right about Usher being in Scary Movie 5.
Thank you.
I'm not sorry. At all. No. And never will be.
You are an awful person. And I win again.
But still, you're racist.
No.
I'll figure out some other way that you're racist in the future.
Racist. You're just stupid. Yeah, to the wonder, if you really like Malick, you will probably like what he's doing here. If you've always thought Malick was kind of a load, this is not the movie that's going to make
you think otherwise. I've always liked Terrence Malick. I don't dislike him at the moment. I think I like this movie the least of all the films I've seen by him.
That's the general consensus. I admire him.
I'm still a fan.
I admire him more than I like him, and I get what he's trying to do, and I think it's interesting what he's trying to do. It just doesn't speak to me personally. So yeah, this movie kind of left me cold, but his movies kind of tend to leave me cold anyway. Except for, I love Badlands, I love Days of Heaven, and there are parts of Tree of Life I think are great. I'd love to do the fan edit of Tree of Life and make the movie that I think would be really awesome. But that's just me.
More dinosaurs.
Anyway, no, less, lots less. Another oblique Texan with a new movie out is Shane Carruth. Made his premiere, his debut in 2007 with
Primer.
Or 2004.
Primer or Primer?
We weren't sure, actually. Christy and I were discussing that. We couldn't figure it out. Anyway, the director of Primer is back with a new movie called Upstream Color. And it's even harder to describe what the heck happens in it than To the Wonder was. But it basically involves hypnosis and pigs and worms and ambient sound and regret and fraud, I guess. 2004 was primary.
Here's my situation. All right, before I start talking about this movie, it would be wise of listeners to go to the film's website.
Which is?
We can link to it on the page. It's lots of different letters all in a...
Oh, it's not like upstreamcolormovie.com?
No.
No, that would be too easy.
Exactly. But it has opened in odd locations.
Yeah, the director...
It's been out a couple weeks.
...is overseeing the release himself.
Yeah, he's self-distributing this film.
Yeah.
It's been out a couple weeks, but it has recently expanded to Los Angeles, Santa Monica, I'm reading this, Pasadena, San Francisco, Berkeley, Seattle, Cambridge, Chicago, Toronto, Vancouver, Pittsburgh, and Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. That's where you can see it right now. According to the website, you can pre-order it for $20 and watch it streaming, downloaded, on May 7th.
Huh.
Which is good. You know.
It's a movie to see in a theater.
It is. That's very true. It's very true.
If you have that option.
If you have the option, try to see it in the theater. I don't really want to talk so much about the plot because I went in absolutely cold.
Yeah,
I went in not knowing a thing about it. And I really believe that when you see this film for the first time, and you're going to want to see it more than once.
Yeah.
That you should experience it fully as it presents itself to you, with all of the what, you know, that comes with that. Because about half a dozen times or more during this film, I said to myself, what? And nothing thrills me in a movie more than that. When I know that the director, when I know that the filmmakers have control over what they're doing, for them to throw me those curves. Mm-hmm. But basically, briefly, it involves the hijacking, the erasure of consciousness on the part of a couple of the main characters. They are then controlled, decontrolled, and then left alone to find each other.
Right.
And then the consequences of that moment. I looked up what Upstream Color was.
What the title means?
What it, no, not what the title means.
What the phrase means?
What it is.
What is it?
And we can link to that
on our Facebook page.
The Linoleum Knife Facebook page. But the link I found was on geneticengineeringnews.com. I'll just read you a little chunk of what it means. It says, within the pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical industry, there are many process streams that require purification by some means or another. Typically, this requires that a specific impurity is removed or that a range of impurities are eliminated. In the latter case, these impurities are never fully characterized and are generally called color species. In all cases, the color is regarded as an impurity that must be removed in order to avoid any adverse quality problems downstream with the final pharmaceutical product. The removal of upstream color also serves to improve the resin lifetime of expensive chromatography media that is used in downstream purification.
Okay.
So, I just read that little bit. What that comes down to is, upstream color is, it refers to impurities that can sometimes be left behind in the product and cause you trouble down the road.
Okay.
So, the things that happen to these people in the beginning really screw them up by the end, even as they try with all their might to
move past
it in toward each other.
Yeah.
It's a love story. It's a science fiction movie. It is unlike anything that you have seen in a theater this year. It is, people might compare it to The Wonder, compare it to The Wonder, but it is absolutely nothing
like that
film. This is, To the Wonder is gauzy and opaque, and this is precise.
Yeah, and the thing with To the Wonder is, like, you know, there is a story there to be followed if you're paying enough attention. Whether or not you find it interesting is something else. Here you're left with more, there's a hole that's being created, a hole with a W. I mean, it all, things link together, things feel like they are building towards something, and on one level there's a certain understanding of what's happening, but in terms of actually kind of breaking down the plot and what it all means and who's doing what is the kind of thing that's going to spawn, you know, those kind of online charts like Memento or Primer, for that matter, had. Unlike you, you love that your movies where they're in control and they're only, you know, giving you information drips and drabs. I get very impatient. I get irritated by movies like that. But this one, I really was captivated by it. I kind of went into its whole sort of dreamy, you know, but very kind of, you know, icy surface in a way. I found it very compelling. It is the best sound designed film I have seen, and I can't tell you how long.
And he's he's one of those, you know, one man bands. Like, he does everything in this film.
He's like Tommy Wiseau. He's a writer, producer, director, star.
Yeah. There's a lot that's left unexplained.
Yeah.
And it requires you to connect images and sounds. It's really intimate. There's a lot of close-up. But in the trade-off of those close-ups is that it excludes visual information that you might otherwise be getting.
Right.
And so you don't always know what's going on around these very precise moments. But again, if you are really paying attention, you will piece together the skeleton of this.
Yeah.
And then when you see it the second time, which is what I'm going to do probably tomorrow. Because
you'll leave with something.
I have not seen a film yet in 2013 that feels as vital and ambitious and sophisticated and meticulous and just like just vibrating with this weird kind of life. And nothing makes me happier than that. It is so far my favorite film of the year.
Yeah.
And I don't even know exactly what I saw yet. Yeah. I mean, I do. I'm in the middle of writing my review. It's, you know, late, obviously. It opened like 2 weeks ago,
in New York, 10
days ago or whatever. But I know that I have seen something major and important.
Yeah.
And you know it's great when you're reading film critics who dislike it, who call it pretentious. Because that's code for, I'm not even going to go with this. I'm not even going to bother trying to figure this out. You're not telling the story the way I want you to tell a story, right. So screw you.
Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? You're pretentious.
Yeah.
The minute I read that in print, I think, I never have to listen to anything you say again. Like, if you're a writer who uses that word, I automatically know I can ignore you for the rest of my life. Because what it says is, you're not trying. You know?
Of course, now I have to go look back and see if I've ever used it. But no, I agree with you.
I stopped listening to you a long time ago.
This is true. it's a lazy shorthand. This is a movie where I was okay. Not only okay with it being enigmatic, I was really sort of entranced by its enigma. And I have one complaint. The fake book covers for Walden look really crappy.
Do you think?
Yeah, they look kind of old
70s, 80s.
They don't, though. They look like they were like... They, I can tell in a movie when somebody has just whipped something up in Photoshop. Like, Wes Anderson. Say what you want about Wes Anderson. His book covers are meticulous.
Well, okay, yes.
He's really raised the bar for that sort of thing.
For fake.
People hold up fake newspapers, like, you know, you really bring it or don't bother at all, because you're going to take me right out of the movie with that kind of thing.
At one point during the film, all I could think of was, does she have a frog brain now? Is her memory made of frogs? Like, why is that guy? Wait.
Is she part pork rind?
So, yeah.
Yeah, go see Upstream
Color. Go see it twice.
And ideally, if you can, if you live in a part of the country where it's going to come, see it in a theater, preferably in a theater with a really kick-ass sound system. Because the listening to it is just breathtaking.
Yeah. So great.
Are those our movies this week? In the House.
In the House.
In the House. The new Francois Ozon, one of my favorite working filmmakers. It's based on a play, and it's about a literature teacher who has a student who has basically been faking a friendship with a classmate because he wants to get inside the classmate's house that he has always sort of envied, because the classmate, Claude is the writer and Rafa is the classmate, and Rafa just seems to have this perfect family with the mom and the dad and the little quaint suburban house, and you know, Claude lives alone with his father who, you know, is infirm, and
so it's like single white female.
Not exactly, because it's more about the teacher and how he gets so he's so impressed with Claude's talent and so sort of fascinated by the story and how it's all unfolding that he actually winds up enabling him far more than he should. You know?
Right.
It's twisty and it's funny, and I said it's the best teacher student movie since Election, because you know the teacher himself is played by Fabrice Muccini. I forget his name. He was in Claire's Knee. He's been in a bunch of stuff. You know, he's like a failed novelist, and you know, so now he just surrounds himself with books and with, you know, teaching these kids and stuff. And his wife is played by Kristen Scott Thomas, who loves speaking French in movies.
Yeah, well, good for her.
Yeah, she's really good at it.
Like that's your model of what to do when you get older. And
right,
Hollywood's like, yeah, we've seen you.
Right,
you know, like have a second language. Go off to some cool country where they make a lot of movies and
it worked for them. It worked for her and Charlotte Rampling and Geraldine Chaplin. I really want you to see it because as a former teacher, you know, you have a special admiration for teacher movies, I think.
Yeah, I'll eventually see this. Yeah.
Yeah. The Rafa's mother is played by Polanski's wife, Emmanuel Seignier.
Yes.
And it's a funny movie about sort of you know, the ethics of art, I guess, in a way, and you know, what's going on behind what seems like, you know, the ideal household and stuff. And the performances are all really good. And, you know, Ozon's usual sort of dark wit is very much present. And
right.
It's a lot of fun. It's really good.
People He's really it. Prolific, that guy. He makes like a movie or two every year.
He cranks them out, yeah. I haven't even seen all of them. Like, I haven't seen the Flying Baby one.
Right.
Or the one in English. But I've seen most of his films.
Baby's Day Out.
Yes, Baby's Day Out.
Le bébé
day out. Bob de jour. Yeah, no. Jour de fête. My DVD pick this week is The Hideaways, which is based on the novel From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basilee Frankweiler, because author E.L. Konigsberg died on Friday. And speaking of Wes Anderson and his book covers, Mrs. Basilee Frankweiler, if you grew up in the 70s, it was a...
That book's never not in print.
Yeah.
That book, it's not about the 70s.
If you grew up since the 70s.
If you grew up reading a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a terrific book. And he very directly gives it a shout out in The Royal Tenenbaums when he talks about the younger Tenenbaums sneaking out and spending the night in the Museum of Natural History. The Hideaways was a film version with Ingrid Bergman as Mrs. Frankweiler, and it's charming. We saw it for my birthday a couple of years ago, and they did it at CineFamily. There is another version that was made for TV with Lauren Bacall that's got the same title as the book that I have not seen.
I haven't seen that one either.
But it's not on DVD. But Warner Archive did make The Hideaways available, so that's my pick this week.
Yeah.
Letters.
I got some letters. This one's from Grant. Hello, gentlemen. This is my first time to write in, but I've been listening to the show for a little over a year now and love it. First, I would like to thank Dave. That's right. For playing the song I Was Wrong by Live Skull a few episodes back. What an amazing song.
And what a coincidence that this week you are wrong.
Grant and I are now, we're best friends.
Fine. And you're still wrong about Scary Movie 5.
We're best friends now, Grant. Next, I'd like to check in with Alonso and make sure that he's seen Barry Lyndon. I remember hearing him say that he'd never seen it a few months back. Have you still not seen it?
I've still not seen it because it is one of those films that I am holding out to see on the big screen.
On the big screen.
And because this is Los Angeles, there are more opportunities than you might imagine to see Barry Lyndon.
It screens about once a year here, more or less.
So one of these times, I'm going to go see it, but I'm not going to watch it on TV.
I remember him saying, I'm not a big Kubrick fan, but I love Barry Lyndon. It's a must-see.
Okay.
I really love your DVD picks, particularly Dave's. and I really enjoyed when Dave was going on his Bresson kick. That's because you're great, Grant.
What a treat for everyone that's
Grant,
been.
Grant is an amazing listener. Maybe our best listener. The best listener we've ever had.
Is he on a bubblegum card?
I don't know.
I don't know how you can be called great if you haven't been on a bubblegum
card. My point being that y'all should talk about older films more often. maybe dedicating a month to a specific filmmaker and featuring one of their films each week of the month could be fun. Parentheses, question mark, closed parentheses, exclamation point.
Okay. As long as it's not Bresson.
Oh, you're going to watch some Bresson.
Maybe, but I'm not going to talk about it on this show.
Yeah.
Because everyone's sick of that except for Grant.
No, they're not. No, they're not. Just because it is customary, here's my top 10 list. Knife me. Number one, Babel.
Ew!
I don't like you anymore, Grant.
I was going to say, you were the one who loved Grant.
We were going to be boyfriends, but this is it's over now.
Wow. He probably smokes, too.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yay.
The Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, yes. Yep.
The Seventh Seal.
With Demi Moore.
What?
Oh, no, sorry, that's The Seventh Sign. That other one, yes. Okay, right, gotcha.
Remember how you were going on about how I forgot about Usher being in Scary Movie 5? Now it's your turn.
No, because I didn't call you a racist over it.
You're racist against Ingmar Bergman.
Go on. What else is on his list?
The Seventh
Son. That's where my brain went for some reason. I've only had one coffee today.
See, Alonzo, The Seventh Seal is this movie about debt.
Debt, yes,
coming to play chess.
With Max von Sydow.
Antichrist?
Ugh.
Grant and I just got back together.
Fine. I hope you're very happy together.
I think
with Chaos Reigns.
The Deer Hunter.
Okay.
Lahane.
Oh, man! Is City of God on there too? Jesus.
I super hate Lane.
You just broke up with him again.
We just broke up again. The Last Temptation of Christ.
Mm.
La Ventura.
No. Okay.
And the Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah.
So you got 80% knife, Grant.
Yeah. 75 for me because I'm not down with the Antichrist, but whatever.
Well, that's a great movie. All right. Next one is from our pal Timmy Semenza, who he's a good listener and he writes sometimes.
Yes.
To us. Hey Linoleum Knifers, I have been making my way through the backlogs of your film reviews in my spare time, but notice that your reviews go back only as far as early 2006. I know from your books and podcasts that you've been writing on the internet for longer than that, 1999 for iFilm, if I recall correctly, for Dave. Alonzo, you wrote for The Advocate around the same time, right? So I was wondering if there was anywhere I could go to find older reviews. Well, to answer that question, iFilm not only went away, but I'm basically erased. I wrote a lot of reviews after that for, sometimes for The Advocate, which appeared in print and occasionally online. Sometimes, but then again, The Advocate also went away.
Well, The Advocate didn't go away, but it's had a very iffy record of putting stuff online. So and a few...
Even the things that went online did not live
very
long.
So you can find a few things that I wrote for The Advocate online, but yeah, for the most part, you would... Yeah.
And I used to write non-bylined reviews for E! Online.
Right.
You would never know if it were mine or not. And then... so basically 2005, I started at iFilm. I mean, 2005, I started at movies.com, like October, I think, of 2005. And then with the exception of a blip in 2008, when they canned everybody, that movies.com, seriously, changed hands, like new owners came along and just fired everybody. and then they hired me back.
After public acclamation.
But I had a summer of just... Summer 2008 was so good. It was so great. Because I was like, I can go see any movie I want, whenever I want. I don't have to go see you know, License to Wed on Monday night at 7:30 out in Westwood. Like, I don't have to make that drive and then sit through a movie where Robin Williams is the wacky priest and the robot babies squirt blue poop from their mechanical anuses. And
is Robin Williams also the priest in The Big Wedding?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Is it a sequel?
Maybe. Mandy Moore's not in it, though.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Yeah.
I started writing for MSNBC in, what, late summer 2006?
I don't know.
I think that's. And then I got laid off toward the end of 2008 when the economy fell apart. And then I spent a year editing a site called queersided.com that no longer exists.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. I wrote for them, too.
Yeah, it, too, went away.
It was real gay.
We were talking yesterday about it. Like, all this stuff that we wrote is just... completely gone to the ether and the internet, whereas, like, you know, our friend who has, you know, a couple of embarrassing, you know, teenage photos, those will never ever die. But we appreciate you doing the backlogging there, Timmy. But yeah, that's it. If it's not popping up on Google, it's just not.
It's funny that I'm reading this letter because earlier in the podcast I just said,
yeah, don't read my old stuff.
And I always read these letters completely cold. I never pre-read them. Also, I think the both of you should record audiobooks of your respective written works, media for which I would gladly pay. We love hearing
that. Yay. Well, Dave needs to do an audiobook for Exile and for his upcoming book, yeah. Keep It Heavy, Man. I don't know that, since my stuff is more sort of film reference, I don't know that anybody wants to sit and hear me talk about
maybe
Christmas movie after Christmas movie, but I appreciate the thought.
He's asking for an audiobook of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Well, that's sweet.
I think it could work.
We'll see.
He said, I would repurchase them just to hear you guys narrate.
Thanks to me.
Finally, Alonzo, why don't you try your hand at a memoir in a similar vein as Dave White's aforementioned book? Not necessarily with all the same metal-influenced rage or middle country stubbornness, but as a glimpse into the undoubtedly fascinating first-generation Spanish-American intelligence you express through your film journalism. Yeah, Alonzo, why don't you do that?
That's very kind of you. I got nothing. As Dave will be the first to tell you, I'm a terrible storyteller because I don't remember details.
I can't ever get you to tell me what you just did. Like he will come home from some event that I don't want to go to, but that I want to know about when it's over. And I'll be like, what happened? And he'll be like, it was all right. Oh, yeah, well, what happened? Oh, I don't know. And that's when the choking begins. Because I really do need to know all the details.
Yeah. So
I don't ever get them.
I don't know that I have a memoir in me, but it's very sweet of you to ask.
I don't get the details I need.
Yes, well.
P.S. I rewatched City of God.
Oh, boy.
And have chosen to rethink its place in my top 10.
Well done.
As for the Nutcracker in 3D, ain't nobody got time for that.
Indeed not.
And finally, this last letter is from James Vaughn. I recently picked up the book Screening Party by Dennis Hensley of the Comedy Couch podcast.
That's correct.
And saw that the pair of you got name-checked in the acknowledgments. Just wondered which chapters owe a lot to you guys. I'm guessing the cruising chapter relies heavily on your bon mot. Oh, and also just to say that your review of Olympus Has Fallen made me way more interested in seeing it than any magazine article, trailer, or web promo has done. Thanks for the entertaining reviews, chaps. All the best. James in London. Yada, yada.
Thank you, James in London. Yes, I know I was on fire for the cruising chapter.
I was not. I don't remember being on fire for the cruising chapter. Here's how that book played out. What happened was Dennis used to write for... British Premier magazine, and eventually what he did for that magazine was he would watch a movie with his friends, us included, among a group of other people.
When it started, actually, we were still in Dallas.
Yeah.
We missed some of the first ones.
Among a group of other people, he would watch movies with his friends, and we would all go to his house, we would watch the movie, and he would put a tape recorder in the middle of the coffee table and then just let us talk during the film. And tell our own, you know, associations with the movie, just whatever we wanted to say, whenever we wanted to say it. We'd pause the movie to have discussions and stuff like that. And what I did was, with those articles, he took those articles and sort of gave it a fictional narrative arc.
Yeah, he created characters that created were the mouthpieces. Characters,
yeah, the stuff. Created characters to be composites of the people.
Right. Like, I'm photographed on the back cover of the book, but the character Ross is sort of an amalgam of me and Dave and our friend Robert Abley, who's been on the show.
And more than
and
that.
And other people's lines come out of his mouth. Yeah. But, I mean, most of the physical, the visual description and a lot of the other stuff about him are a melding of our three.
Sort of ish, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not just like the three of us, but we're part of the composite
right.
of characters.
And for example,
things we said don't necessarily come out of Ross's mouth.
Exactly. They
come out of other people's
mouths. Like, you know, when I made the joke in the Pretty Woman chapter that if Mary Riley had a Julia tries on clothes montage, it would have been a hit, only she would have been trying on the same dumpy black frock over and over again. They put that in a woman's mouth because Ross is a straight guy. And so, you know, some of my jokes sounded better coming out of the ladies.
Like in my book, Exile in Guyville, I actually... make a sort of very private nod to Screening Party by telling the same story about Jennifer Beals at the tailor.
All right.
When I saw her there one day at the tailor getting some alterations done, and I told that story to Dennis, and it wound up in Screening Party.
In the Flashdance chapter.
And it's in my book, too. And so, but like, I think the most that came out of my mouth that wound up in the book was... talking about the Sound of Music.
Mm.
I'm a big Sound of Music fan.
Not Poseidon Adventure stuff?
But we didn't watch the Poseidon Adventure from the book.
No, but we talk in Armageddon, we talk a lot about disaster movies.
Yeah, yeah, stuff. Yeah. I may have said some things about the Poseidon Adventure 2 that wound up in there. Some stuff in the Glitter chapter.
We were there that night.
Yeah, yeah. The Glitter chapter, we were in that theater. The final chapter of the book is we all go to see Glitter.
After 9/11.
On opening night, right after 9/11. And
Tyra Banks is there.
Tyra Banks was there. just a weird, crazy, strange evening of movie going. But yeah, that was us. We were there with that
group. Yeah, it's out of print. You can still find copies of Screening Party, like
inexpensively
on Amazon and stuff. Yeah. It's a book we highly recommend. It's very, very funny and a terrific novel.
And Alonzo is on the back cover posing as the character Ross,
right?
With just a goatee,
yeah,
not a full beard,
pre-beard.
Yeah,
that's how old that book is.
Mm-hmm. So yes, that's our involvement in that book.
So this brings us to the end of another episode, or is there more another letter?
There's not another letter, but I want to say one thing about if you are in New York City and you care at all about contemporary art, on April 25th, a friend of ours, a guy named Patrick Lee, has a show in a schmancy New York gallery.
Yes.
The gallery is Ameringer, McEnery, and Yowei. I guess that's how you pronounce the names of the people who run that gallery. It's in Manhattan, April 25th. He does these really, really, really detailed, kind of photorealistic drawings of the roughest looking dudes that you never want to meet in an alley in the dark. And it's his work is great. Go to the show. You know, I'm friends with his partner Frank,
right.
But Patrick is great as well. And go to that show if you're in New York. Do it.
And if we're plugging, for What the Flick, in addition to doing our weekly movie reviews, I'm now doing Monday morning Mad Men recaps with some of the folks. So if you're a fan of that show, check those out. They're a lot of fun. And we'll be posting links to it on the Linoleum Knife page when they go up. So, thank you for listening. And as always, we remind you to check out our friends in the podcast universe, Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, their show, The Comedy Couch, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, which Dave and I will be guesting on sometime soon, I think, in the next few weeks. We'll keep you posted. The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this program at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a review, that would be nifty. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our Linoleum Knife Podcast page at Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at getglue.com. And if you've got any questions or comments or want to send us a top 10 list or any other career advice or life questions, you can contact us at LinoleumPodcast.
Or money.
Linoleum
Podcast. Any money you want to send us? We like money a lot.
Linoleumpodcast at gmail.com.
Did Tony ever get back a hold of you about having like breakfast today?
Nope.
What's his deal?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
I'm going to kick his comedy couch. Are we done?
Yeah.
All right. Goodbye.